The Blazers Edge Podcast with Dave Deckard.
I'm a little distracted. I think the Blazers are still scoring on Denver.
And Phil Nasons.
Man, that was a beatdown. I knew that they would win big, but I didn't think that big. And they are still scoring. You can hear the balls bouncing in the background. And you can hear the voice of Bill Shonley saying, Rip City!
Hey there, Blazers fans. We're back. That's right. The Blazers Edge Podcast featuring Dave Deckard and yours truly, Phil Nasons, is here for another week. And we're really excited to be here. And we got some interesting news to report in case you didn't know. And we've got some great news to report in case you didn't know. But let's just get to it. And joining me, please welcome our exalted Poobah himself, the managing editor of BlazersEdge.com. Please welcome Dave Deckard to his own show. How you doing, man?
Yeah, featuring. That means you do most of the singing, but I rap during the bridge, right?
That's what it means, yeah. I don't think I should be doing most of the singing. I could turn this into a pet peeve of mine, but I think I'll save this for a different time about the singing bit. But let's just say I was really singing when I saw the number of young people who are going to attend probably their very first Portland Trailblazers game. 1,150, sir.
Yep, 1,151 to be technical.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Can't forget our last friend there. But yeah, it's pretty amazing. We are awed and humbled, of course, thanks to everybody who helped out with Blazers Edge Night. And on March 30th against the Phoenix Suns, we will have about 5% of the arena will be people that our readers, our listeners have sent who otherwise would not have been able to go. And it will be a very special night. We'll, of course, bring you stories from that night, and it'll be incredible. So thanks to everyone who helped out with that. This is a new record for us. We seem to get bigger and bigger every year, and it's thanks to you. So we appreciate everything that you do, and the tickets that you guys bought, it was incredible, and a lot of people will be very happy. I am still getting emails from people who are requesting tickets, and we're saying yes, yes, yes for the most part. So it's wonderful to be able to do that, wonderful to be able to make people's days in this way.
Thank you. That's all I have to say. Thank you. Now, you're going to go to the game too, right?
Yeah, I'll be there. Some Blazers Edge staff members will be there, so it will be a great night.
And Phil will be there next year.
That would be really cool.
I will really be there because this is fantastic. I can't believe how many tickets were donated. That's incredible, and it's going to be so much fun. Now, will you get to meet some of these people?
Usually do. Some come up and say hello, and others send emails and cards and stuff like that. So, yeah. We get some feedback, and it's fun. It's very touching. We've heard plenty of stories of people who just are overwhelmed because they didn't expect that. I mean, going to a game is neat, but it seems like a simple process. But the relationships that change with the students and the way they open up and the chance to be kids again and not be quite so hardened, so to speak, and no pun intended, it's not Houston. It's a big deal to them, a bigger deal than many thought. So we tend to get letters and emails like that, and that's of course always very special.
And let's not forget how this all began. And you deserve a very big hand. Folks, if you are listening to this show, give my friend a round of applause too.
Oh, well, it's not me. I didn't buy 1,151 tickets. It's all of us together. It's the Blazers Edge community, and Blazers Edge really is about all of us. That's what makes it special, and this is what we do to define ourselves, and I think it's a pretty good thing.
I think it's a great thing, and you all out there, fantastic. Fantastic job out there. Blazers Edge, the number one NBA community that I've ever been a part of. I'm really thrilled to be a part of it, too. Congratulations, folks. You did it. But, you know, that was the good stuff. Now let's get into the not-so-good stuff, Dave. Wesley Matthews. I couldn't believe this. I really couldn't. I thought everything was really starting to come together. and then he blows out his Achilles. What does that do to the Portland Trail Blazers?
Well, it's not good. I was watching the game a little bit delayed on the DVR, as I sometimes have to do. And then I keep tabs on email and what have you. And I knew something happened when the staff email list started exploding, and you know, you couldn't help but read it, and it's like, oh no. And then I spent the rest of the game watching. It was like just waiting for a train wreck. And it's funny how something that looks so small, you know, just a little extension of the leg, can have such a huge effect. It's not pleasant. It's not fun for Matthews or the Trailblazers. You know who it's really not fun for, I'm sure, is LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, this guy is playing through thumb injuries, has dedicated himself to this season, and playing through pain because he was convinced something pretty special could happen. Maybe it still can, but this is certainly a blow. And what is he thinking right now? That, you know, I'm playing through these injuries, and now Matthews can't. And now it looks like the season might be dimmed a little bit. That can't be any fun. And, you know, it's not the end of the world for the Blazers. They have a lot of wings, and they have a lot of wings with various parts of Matthews' skill set. But there's simply no way to replace a guy who's been with the team 5 years now, and to whom everything is second nature. It's just, no matter who you put in there, there's going to be a learning curve. It's not going to quite be the same. And with the playoffs the way they're going to be this year, you needed kind of everything going right, and this is not going to go right. So what can you say? It is what it is, as they say, and it's no fun. We wish Wes, of course, a speedy recovery, and I don't think it'll affect his free agency. I think he'll still get paid. I think he'll still be a Trailblazer, but this is not the way that they wanted the year to finish, and it's certainly going to be interesting to see how they cope.
I saw a picture of him on Twitter just before we got on the air today, and he's already shooting the ball, which is probably a good thing, and it's normal for him. He worked hard at his game, too, and he's had a career year. His three-point shooting has been really good. It's hard to replace that, but there are parts. It makes that trade for Aflalo look even that much bigger now. And I know, obviously, they didn't do that with foresight in mind, but what does that do to the bench now? How does that fix or mess up the rotation on the bench? Because what you have is you had that little set with Aflalo coming off the bench, and now he's starting. How does that bench look now?
Well, obviously, it's not as strong as it was. And one of the interesting things that we've talked about on site is whether the Blazers will eventually move to address that if Aflalo isn't quite clicking in the starting lineup, or if the bench doesn't have enough power. You could promote somebody else to the title of starter anyway, even if they only played a few minutes, just to offset Aflalo's minutes and let him come off the bench and play in those middle stretches when he's more free to score and to kind of express himself offensively. But for now, what it means is there's increased pressure on Darrell Wright, who I'm sure can handle it and in some ways welcomes it. CJ McCollum, that you don't know about. Those two are the main guys. Steve Blake, really, as well. His minutes are going to come back, and his role is going to get more important. So for the veterans, that's going to be an okay thing. That said, the Blazers bench wasn't all that great before Aflalo got here, and I don't anticipate they'll be all that great going forward, even though those veterans probably will be able to stretch their wings more. CJ McCollum, I think, is a wild card. He can have great nights. He can have bad nights. And his first night back was not that impressive. So we'll have to see how he performs. He could be the one difference maker, but I think he's just still too young and too inconsistent to be able to make a huge effect night to night or change the fortunes of the team. So it's not a good thing, but you know, they'll cover, they're adequate. It just simply has become a really, really starter heavy team once again.
It sure has, but it's still the Portland Trailblazers. They're still a good team. I mean, let's not mix words. They're still a good team. They've been injured by this. That's hurt them, but they'll recover. They'll be okay. And I think they're still going to get to the Western Conference Finals. I think that even now more than ever, they look like they want to play together even more now. So, and I'm sure Wesley will be there, right? He's going to come to the game still, and maybe that'll help out. He's a big part of that team, whether he's injured or not. I think he's got a voice in that locker room too.
Yeah. The big loss, I think, is defensively. And we talked about this today a little bit on site, is that offense, I think, is instinctive to most players and easy enough to pick up, especially for a guy like Aflalo. But defense is more than just knowing what to do. It's being able to act on instinct. It's being able to do instead of thinking about what you're supposed to be doing. It's being able to trust each other, to communicate, to know that the other guys are going to be where they're supposed to be, and to react to what they are doing as well as what the offense is doing. That is the part that's going to be missing. There's just no way to replace what Matthews does there, not only because he's a good defender, but because after 5 years, this stuff is kind of instinctive to him, and it's just not going to be to anybody else. It's just, there's going to be a little hitch there. I think we saw it dramatically in Minnesota on Saturday. I don't think it'll be that bad. I mean, that was horrible. But you could see where the defensive continuity just wasn't there. And I don't think it's going to come all the way back anytime soon. That is the worrisome part.
Yeah, they did look a little shaky there. But again, it's the chemistry part. It's knowing what your teammate is going to do, you know, at all times. And that's what they started to, you could see that though. It was getting better. And then all of a sudden, Wesley's out and now it's not the same. And well, it is what it is. I say that often, and I guess they'll get over it. They'll rebound from this and they'll get that continuity. It will never be the same. It can't be. I mean, that was just a special unit, and we'll see that unit again next season. But until then, we just have to wait and be patient and let the fellas figure it out. If it was a different coach, I'd be nervous. But I've been pumping up Terry Stotts for Coach of the Year all year, and I'm going to continue to do so, because if anyone can figure out how to get these guys to respond in the face of adversity, it's going to be Terry Stotts. And I think this is going to be okay. Minnesota, that was an aberration. It's not going to be the rule, especially tomorrow night against Houston. The beard and the weird come to town. And that should be fun. But right now, you know, we talked about having callers, Dave, and we did get a whole bunch of people called in. Thank you all for your phone calls and your questions. But because we had so much to jam in this week, we took what we thought was the most interesting question. And here it is.
Blazers Edge Mailbag.
I have a question. When are you going to get rid of Mike Rice? He is a total embarrassment and incompetent. And people say he represents the Trailblazers. Really? I think he has early signs of dementia, especially when he calls Nicholas Batum Lillard. Please, come on, folks. Retire him. He's embarrassing. Thank you. That's my question. When are you getting rid of Mike Rice? Please.
All right, you go first. What do you think of this? First of all, that was the most clearest question that I've ever received on my phone line. You can understand that perfectly. I didn't even have to enhance it at all.
You're trying to get me in trouble here, Phil.
You want me to go first? I could do it. I mean,
it's all right. Oh, man.
good okay. luck, by the way. I forgot to wish you good luck.
Look, Mike Rice has a certain style, but we all know this, and it's part of the landscape in Portland now. He's been around since most of us were kids. So at this point, you know what you're getting. This is not a surprise. It's like your crazy uncle who comes to Thanksgiving, and you're pretty sure it's 90% act and maybe 10% real, but it all comes together to form a distinct personality. And, you know, you either love it or hate it. It's an acquired taste, but at least it's a personality. I mean, look at all the people who broadcast around the league who have trouble establishing any kind of voice or just don't know how to communicate. Not all of us can be great orators. Not all of us can be great tacticians and explain ourselves in ways people can understand. So, look, I understand. It's not your taste. I think there's room for argument there. And I think sometimes Rice does go overboard. I think sometimes the act overtakes the game and the broadcast. And it just, he kind of sticks out like a sore thumb. It's uncomfortable. And that's granted. But it's a little harsh, I think, taking a guy who's at least carved out a niche for himself and done something different and saying that, well, some of that stuff, that he doesn't belong or that, you know, it's real or that he needs to go. I get it, not your cup of tea, but Mike Rice is probably going to be around for, you know, until he chooses to quit. So I don't think you'll get much traction there. And it's just one of those things where it mixed feelings. Like, I get what you're saying, but I'd rather have some personality than just cookie cutter, no personality NBA broadcaster.
Oh, now it's my turn, eh?
Oh yeah. Why not?
Why not? Okay. I'll tell you this. It's not easy to carve out a niche in the broadcasting business. It's difficult because a lot of people want to do this. And he's been doing it for the Portland Trailblazers for 25 years. And that says something right there. Okay, he's not your cup of tea. You know, the thing is that he's not trying to be either. He's just trying to get people to talk about what he get people to talk and to point things out to get the conversation started. That's his job. And he does it very well because, well, we're talking about him. And this is the first time that I ever have, but I wouldn't suspect that anyone's going to fire him. In fact, I think he gets to call his own shots at this time. If I'm not mistaken, Dave, he is also the producer of one of their shows. I think it's a half hour show or something that he does, and he does radio stuff too. He's much in demand. And, you know, yeah, he's probably not your cup of tea. Maybe he's not a lot of people's, but God bless him. I mean this too. You can survive in this business for 25 years in the same employer too? Sheesh. That's called longevity. There's a reason for that. It's because you turn on your TV. That's what he wants you to do. I think he says things to get you to hate him because it's easier. And this is what I was told, Dave, is that if you can get people to hate you, they will listen every day. But the people who love you might not. You know, they'll still care about you, but they won't listen every day. And let's face it, when the Blazers are on, you watch. And a lot of the reason is because of him, not just because the team's great. And I think he's fantastic at what he does. Whether he's your cup of tea or not, well, that's up to you. But he ain't going nowhere. That's all I have to say, I think.
Do you get to watch any of the League Pass broadcasts with Mike Barrett and Mike Rice?
Okay, I watched one Saturday, in fact.
This last Saturday, yeah. So how do you think they compare to, I mean, you have an outside perspective. How do you think they compare to broadcast teams around the league?
I like them a lot. I really enjoyed it myself. I wanted to watch to see what would happen against without Wesley Matthews. I'm not going to lie about it. I didn't watch him just to answer this question. But I actually found myself sort of riveted to the whole thing. I ended up watching it on my computer. But I thought that he did a nice job. I thought he's passionate about what he does. And he kept me watching, and it was late, you know. So, I mean, it is what it is, and especially on a Saturday night when I need to sleep for Sunday. And I like him. There are worse folks. I watch a lot of basketball, and there are worse announcers than Mike Rice, a lot worse. I think that people outside of Portland enjoy watching their games when he's calling them. So that's my opinion. I think he's fantastic. I really do. I like him.
Yeah, you know, if I have a complaint about broadcasters or Portland broadcasters, I suppose I'm a little more old school. I think sometimes they and Brian Wheeler both have the emotion instead of setting us up to have the emotion. And, you know, sometimes you can tell too much through what they are saying, and it's like they're doing the thing and we're watching them feel instead of them setting us up to feel what's going on by the way they're describing it. And I think that's a really tough skill to have, to be fair. Very few people do it well. And I think it's a skill that's vanishing. I think of, for instance, the Tonight Show. When I was a kid, it was Johnny Carson. And I mean, what did I know? I didn't know anything about broadcasting or entertainment or anything, but I watched Johnny Carson every once in a while. And his great gift was being able to be funny, but basically being able to set up other people to get out of the way. When he had guests, the focus was on the guest. Now you've got Jimmy Fallon, who I've also watched a couple of times, and you know, he doesn't let the guest do anything that he doesn't then butt into after and do the same, or you know, maybe he thinks better. So it's like we can't see the guest without getting a big goopy layer of Jimmy Fallon on top of it. So it's like he's doing it instead of building a bridge between the guest and us. I think broadcasting, some broadcasters have gone that way. I don't think the Blazers are egregious in it, but sometimes, especially when things are going good or things are going bad, that you get the calls that have the emotion that kind of almost butt out our capacity to have them. We're listening to Mike and Mike instead of listening to the game, or listening to Brian Wheeler instead of listening to the game. That, because I'm old school, that kind of sometimes that irks me. But that's about as far as it goes. Otherwise, I think, like you, that they are probably, you know, as decent as anybody out there. And I don't feel particular animosity toward them. I think they're probably fine. And, you know, be careful what you wish for, because breaking in a new broadcast partner or a new broadcast team may be a little bit more of a process than you think.
Oh, I agree. It's nice that you brought up Johnny Carson. That was, he was one of my idols. I learned a lot watching him, and the fact that when I do my daily show, I rarely speak over my guest. I let them do it. And that's the adjustment I had to make to do this show with you, because I get to speak a little more, but this is a different show. You know who else was good at it? Larry King was fantastic at doing those things. And Art Bell was another great interviewer. Now, in his situation, Rice's situation is a little bit different because, well, his job is to speak. So there's different tasks there. I just, it's not an easy job. It's not easy to find your home behind the mic. And when you do, you know, and you've been able to do it as long as he has, obviously, one, he's not going to change. And two, they're probably not going to remove him. So enjoy him while you can. You're probably going to miss him more when he's finally decides to hang up his microphone. That's when you'll appreciate him probably more. But until then, just either turn the mute the TV or whatever if you don't like him. But yeah, I like,
don't let him ruin your day.
Yeah, don't let him ruin your day. It's still the Portland Trailblazers, but invariably you'll turn it on. But that was a nice question, a nice caller. And I don't have this person's email address. And if they would send me their address, I have a very special present for them. And that's that. Now, we talked a lot about the defensive fails. You know, one of the things, though, that we have an issue that's come up, and a lot of it has to do with the legalization of marijuana in certain states, particularly Colorado. Should marijuana be allowed in the NBA? Should players be able to smoke marijuana and not be penalized for it in the NBA? What do you think? You wrote something about that on your site, didn't you?
Yeah, we did, in the context of Larry Sanders. And I guess I don't necessarily have opinion one way or another. I don't want the NBA to be a pro-drug league. I think that's a dangerous road to walk down, especially with their clientele being, you know, young and rich and, you know, away from home sometimes for the first time, or, you know, first time out of a structured college environment anyway. So I admire the NBA's basically negative or drug negative stance. But you get a case like Larry Sanders where a guy is undergoing depression and kind of self-medicating with marijuana, realizing that marijuana is legal in Colorado, in Washington, in Oregon now. I'm not sure, I haven't kept up if it's legal anywhere else. Also that it's probably not the gateway drug necessarily that we were told in the Nancy Reagan era. I mean, I've not smoked it. I admitted that on site. I've not done drugs, but I've known people who have, and you know, they've smoked some marijuana and went on with their lives, most of them. And I haven't perceived a percentage any greater than, you know, getting hooked up with marijuana or anything harder from marijuana than, for instance, become alcoholics or what have you. I've seen a lot more cigarettes and a lot more alcohol abused than pot. So it's like, excuse me, one of those things where it's not something I'm in favor of, but let's not jump overboard. And when a guy like Sanders is self-medicating with it, that's not good. But if that's your alternative to depression, to maybe, you know, suicidal thoughts on the road when you don't have that much of a support system and what have you, if that's what you got to do in your early 20s to get through that depressive period, then I think that's what you got to do. And I find it disturbing that the NBA will regulate marijuana use, but has no infrastructure formally or policies or what have you relating to mental illness and depression, which are very serious and which can kill people and which are, you know, not uncommon among 20-year-olds, not uncommon among 20-year-olds whose lifestyles have changed, whose emotions are going, you know, this way and that because of their new situation, who are away from home and their support system. I mean, if you think about it, how many of these guys are self-medicating anyway with alcohol, with relationships, with gambling, with any number of other things that the NBA doesn't regulate as much? And yet the guy who regulates with pot gets – or regulates – the guy who self-medicates with pot gets suspended. I don't get that one, and I think in this case it's a loophole in the system that can be tragic. So I'm not for him being pro-pot, but I'd prefer them to look the other way, perhaps, especially in this case. And if a guy runs afoul of local laws, that's different. Then he has, you know, problems concealing it or dealing with it or whatever maybe, and then you act. But I don't think it should necessarily be among the things they test for.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Unlike you, I tried it in college. And late in my senior year in high school, I guess it was a senior trip. And yeah, it made me sleepy. But at first, I ate a lot. I didn't like either one of those things, really. But to be honest, I know people who do smoke marijuana, people who've had cancer and different things like that. And I'm not going to tell them no. And I'm not going to tell a kid like Larry Sanders no. There's obviously some core issues there that need to be addressed. And if that's helping him to address it and to keep him from doing something irrational that could be irrevocable, I think that I would have to look the other way. I mean, these are young people. Sometimes I think we forget that. I know that there are times when I know that I've forgotten that these are 21, 22, 23-year-old kids, basically. I'm almost 50 years old now. And I have to look at it that way, and I say, wow, you know, how many people had it together when they were 23, 24? Not too many. So I would hope that as long as they're not abusing it to the point where it becomes the control of their life or controls their life, I would hope that the NBA looked the other way too. I mean, because you know that they do. I'm not convinced 100%, and I know this from tennis, that every single person out there is clean, or if they've tested positive, gets punished. I'm not convinced of that.
Well, you know, they look the other way for PEDs. I mean, you can't tell me. That's a whole other show.
Right, of course. But you're right.
You cannot tell me that some of these guys, we should do that sometime, maybe in the summer. We can talk about that. But some of them, I suspect that some of the major players in this league are on HGH and other stuff that either they don't test for or something's not going right. You know, they can't detect away. The idea that it's a clean league is not correct. So why do you pick on the guy who's already suffering? The analogy that I thought of, you know, and we want to throw a bone to people. We're not saying marijuana use is good. I wish Larry Sanders wasn't using it. I hope he's not self-medicating with it. I hope he's getting other official help. But life is not always ideal like that. And, you know, sometimes you need to go for a couple months or a couple years before you can do the right thing. And you have to survive in the meantime. And if this is your crutch that keeps you alive, taking it away is just unconscionable. The analogy that I have is like, okay, so there's a guy walking out over a canyon on a tightrope, right? And you say, well, tightrope walking is dangerous, which is true. So you say, well, what are we going to do about it? You know, get a crane or build a platform underneath him? Nah, we'll just take away the tightrope. That'll fix it. No, it won't. I mean, I guess it will in a sense, but that's the stupidest, most uncaring solution to it. The tightrope isn't the problem. It's the whole process and the lack of support underneath. Throw a net underneath there or something, talk to the guy, whatever. But you don't just go and cut the tightrope because it's like, well, this is dangerous. We can't allow tightrope walking, because that guy's going to plunge into the canyon and it's going to be your fault.
That's a very good analogy too. I've counseled kids who have used drugs and alcohol. There's always a core issue there. And whether it's abuse at home or an inferiority complex, there's something there. There's always a core that makes people do things that they probably shouldn't be doing. And I don't know Larry Sanders personally, but from what I've read, he's come from a pretty tough situation. And I've read the same thing about Damian Lillard too, that he's come from a very tough situation, and how they deal with it are different. You know, it's a tough one, and I'm not qualified to diagnose people with mental health issues. But what do you think about this? What do you think about them screening these young people for these things, for mental health issues? Or I know they try to, but is that possible?
Well, I think that the tricky part with mental health is there has to be some agency on the part of the person who's suffering. And that's going to be difficult. I mean, you can't force people into it, especially when their job is in the public spotlight, because at that point, you're basically outing them in front of the world and you're exposing them to a lot of criticism and analysis and heckling and stuff, which has the potential to make things much worse. You're also breaking that news to their families, to their friends back home, what have you, which may take away or alter their basic grounding and support system. So I don't think that you can do anything that's mandatory and forcibly screen or forcibly treat. You can't do that in regular life. I don't think you can do that in the NBA. But I think what they can do is be more aware, make this more a part probably of their educational curriculum for rookies, maybe make this part of a talk. I mean, come on, you're telling me these guys don't have injury prevention and nutrition lectures and stuff like that, stretching and eating and all that? Well, mental health should probably be a part of that. And we should acknowledge some of the things, you know, that, like I said, gambling and self-medicating with various relationships and, you know, sexuality and stuff like that is common. I think we just don't. We don't identify it. And I'm not saying that for instance, a sexually active lifestyle is a sign of a mental problem for some. I think it's just 20-year-old guys doing what they do, and that's great, but that should be a choice. I think sometimes people don't know how to cope with their loneliness on the road and their change in status and what have you, and this becomes an easy out and a thing that they just don't necessarily have control over, or they would like to choose something different, but don't. Why can't we have the availability there as well? And people who want to take advantage of it and need an infrastructure have more of it. And it feels like right now, I think, you know, socially and you know, mental illness wise, the NBA just doesn't have a clue. It's just kind of, oh yeah, this might exist somewhere, but it's not a priority for us. Well, with the clientele that you have, with the players that you have and the ages that they are in their situation, it ought to be more of a priority. And it shouldn't take Larry Sanders falling apart before you, you know, before you do something about this. And it's not just Larry Sanders. I guarantee you that there are more people in the NBA who suffer from mental illness. And I guarantee you that there are more people who leave their playing days and then it hits them. And then they're out in the cold and then they're self-medicating in all kinds of destructive ways. And that's a tragedy because it's like you've used them up and then disposed of them. And it just seems that there are kinder and better ways to help people adjust and make people aware of this issue.
I like what you said about taking responsibility, taking agency. You know, the one thing I was thinking while you were saying, when you were doing your amazing explanation, was this. How does LeBron James go to a psychiatrist if he has a problem? How does he do that? Does he go in the back door? Because if he goes in the front door, there are people sitting in the waiting room. What are the chances somebody on Twitter is going to find out? You know what?
Yeah.
And I think that they take that into consideration too. I don't want anyone to know. I don't want anyone to heckle me, like you said before, about possibly having some issues, you know? And I think that taboo is there, that taboo that if you're suffering from some sort of a mental illness, that you're completely crackers. And that taboo is out there. These guys are a little bit afraid of it. Or maybe they're not able to recognize it. Maybe that education thing that you brought up would work so that they could recognize some of these things. Maybe they need to travel with a counselor on the team or something. They have trainers. They have doctors. They have everything else. I mean, maybe that's what they have to do. I don't know, but it's a tricky situation. And speaking about mental illness, I don't mean to make light of this, but wait till you hear who my
Blazers Edge Player of the Week.
Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay, I have chosen for my Blazer of the Week, Nikola Batum. That's twice this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good choice. He's stepped up maybe not quite as much as you wanted, I mean, in Minnesota, obviously, but he's on a little bit of an upward curve. So yeah, I think you're safe there. I think I like what we've seen out of Nikola the last 2-3 weeks more than I've liked the entire rest of the season. So post All-Star break, his rest seems to have done him good. And by the way, if that's the case, there needs to be some evaluation of what he does next summer, because if he needs more rest in order to fulfill his professional contract, perhaps he should not be playing basketball for 4 years straight every month of the year. And he needs to take some time off in the summer, despite the pressures elsewhere. Look, if you don't run your body out, there'll be plenty of time at the end of your career to play for your home country and what have you. But when you're in your prime and your team is going for a championship, you cannot exhaust yourself to the point where you are simply underperforming, which Batum has done all year long. He's cheated the Blazers out of more than half a season of his play. And that, I think, can't happen. If a week's worth of rest is going to resurrect him that much, he needs to get more rest.
Wow. I'll tell you what, we do agree on a lot of things. I don't like the whole thing. I understand the international play because I coached in Europe for 12 and a half years. I understand the pull that's there from the country, from their countrymen. But still, you're under contract. You're making your main living playing for the National Basketball Association, for the Portland Trail Blazers. That should be your first priority. And unfortunately, well, for whatever reason, it wasn't. But he has had a pretty good little run. Over the past three games, Dave, he's averaging 8.3 more points per game, 3.2 rebounds more, one assist more. He's starting to stuff the stats again. And hopefully that continues. Almost 2 threes a game more. He's definitely stepped up. And I completely agree with you. He cheated the Blazers out of a half a season. And now let's hope he makes it up. It would be nice. It really would. Do you have anybody in mind?
Yeah, I think this week I was leaning toward Aldridge simply because he didn't shoot real well, but he performed well in every other aspect of the game. And of course you could pick LaMarcus every week, but it just has stuck out to me with the Matthews injury. A, how much you depend on Aldridge to do all the little things that he's doing, and B, how much, as he said, as we said, he is playing through injury and making that sacrifice for his team because he believes in them. And just the fact that he's on the court, I mean, he could be recovering from surgery right now. And then Matthews goes down too, and now 2/5 of your starting lineup is gone, and the season is over. And this season is riding on LaMarcus's willingness to play hurt. I don't think we should forget that. I mean, that's it's pretty amazing, a pretty amazing sacrifice he's making, not just personally, but in a contract year. He could have wrapped up the season and gone on to a max level contract, basically. Instead, he's choosing to play it out. So I want to honor LaMarcus, not just for the points and the rebounds this week, but in the light of Matthew's injury, for LaMarcus doing that, it just comes to the forefront.
I completely agree, too. He has done Herculean things. He doesn't have to, by the way. He's in a contract year. Okay, it's safe to say he's getting his. But he doesn't have to play. He doesn't have to prove anything. The fact that he's out there with basically two broken thumbs now and still performing the way that he has and not crying about it, not making letting it become an excuse, he's inspirational, what he's done. And he could be the player of the week every week. He could be the NBA player of the week, as far as I'm concerned, every week. But I had to give it to Batum because he's been exceptionally good the last couple games. But no, all kidding aside, LaMarcus Aldridge is becoming slowly, well, he has been for a while, but he's a hero of mine. The way he's just bucked up, that's what a teammate looks like. He's taking the bullet for the team. He'll get it fixed in the summer, but still, wow. That's something right there that I'm glad that you said that too, that it shouldn't be ignored. No matter what the Portland Trailblazers do this season, and how they finish, and I think they're going to finish very high up there. Like, I think they could easily be Western Conference champions at some point and go on to the finals. No matter what, LaMarcus Aldridge should get a standing ovation after every basketball game because he's earned that.
You know, we're talking about contracts too. What's with that hand wringing around Portland about whether Wesley Matthews is going to get paid? I know that the ACL is hard to recover from, but first of all, Matthews has played for this organization for 5 years. Second of all, he's the perfect fit. Third of all, his game is not necessarily predicated on explosive quickness. He's a three-point shooter. He's a defender. And yeah, he has to move to defend, but he's not, you know, Johnny lateral movement to begin with. So I don't get the hand-wringing. I guess, is it just an obvious question to ask? Like, injury in a contract year, is this going to affect him? I don't know, because I see him getting the same contract from the same team that he was going to anyway. And if I were the Blazers, I wouldn't stiff him. And I don't think that's their intention. If anything, back in the depths of history when the Blazers had players worth paying, Paul Allen showed a willingness to actually pay money to people who were loyal to him. And he was never reticent to give those contracts. And I think, you know, this will prove so again. The reason we haven't seen it over most of the last decade is because you didn't want to sign Sebastian Telfair to a long-term contract. But with Wes Matthews, I don't see this affecting his dollars really much at all. And I think the Blazers will look at the long game here and want him as their shooting guard for the next few years.
You know, folks who are hand-wringing about him getting paid, not getting his dollars, probably don't have much NBA sense. Or maybe it's just a knee-jerk reaction. Maybe that was unfair. He's going to get paid. He's going to get paid by the Portland Trailblazers. Exactly what Dave said, exactly what he was going to get before. He played great this season. He really came into his own. Terry Stotts loves that guy. This is a part of Terry Stotts' offense. Don't forget, he's a three-point shooter. He doesn't have to dribble around. He doesn't have to do a lot. Explosiveness isn't part of the issue for this basketball team, especially for him in his position. All he has to do is spot up, catch, and knock down the three. He can do that. He probably could do that today. Maybe not at the NBA level, but I bet you he could do it in a gym still on one leg. I mean, he's a great athlete. He's getting paid. Let's not worry about that. But what we want to do, we'll finish up the show with this. Damian Lillard. Now, I remember on my daily show, I said to you that I thought that he would probably become a league MVP before he would become an all-star starter. And I think I was hinting around it this year. Is it fair to bring up Damian in the NBA MVP conversation?
This year?
This year.
No. He hasn't done enough, and he hasn't done it consistently enough, as much as some other guys. Now, is he edging toward that? Are we going to be talking about that in years to come? Yeah, I believe so. He'll be, even if he never makes it, he'll at least be mentioned at some point or thought of at that level, just because he'll have the stats and he'll have the personality and the national exposure platform, even in Portland, to do it because of his commercial work and because of his other work and his other talents. He's going to be well known in this league. So, yeah, he'll be talked about at some point when he and the Blazers do really well as an MVP candidate. But this year, I don't see how you can compare him to some of these other guys, as Steph Curry or Russell Westbrook in the Western Conference alone, who are either producing enormous stats or carrying their teams to league-leading records. And Lillard is doing well, but he's not doing that.
That makes sense. I have him at number five still. I think I don't think he's going to win, but I obviously don't. He's not going to win. But I'm going to continue to, you know, we do an MVP watch on my daily show. I do it with Amar from SLC Dunk, and I'm going to continue to talk about him because he has had a very good year and get that in these people's ears that this kid is coming. But right now, this year, no, because Steph Curry, I think Steph Curry is going to win it outright. Although Russell Westbrook has done some Herculean things this season. Where do you see that going within our last few minutes?
In Oklahoma City?
I see. Where do you see this thing going with the MVP race? Is it a two-man race now?
Well, I mean, you never count out Anthony Davis entirely, right? And, you know, there are other names that can be mentioned. But, yeah, it's always easier to vote for guards than big men because they're more identifiable. And they tend to make highlight level plays. So it sure looks like it's shaping up that way. I mean, there aren't that many games left. And, you know, if Westbrook keeps this up for even another 2 or 3 weeks, it's going to be really hard to ignore him. It'll be more interesting to see where Westbrook Durant goes in Oklahoma City, whether Kevin Durant can live with that or whether Westbrook can live with Durant or whether it's a Stephon Marbury and Kevin Garnett situation where each of them thinks that they're so good that they're not prepared to live with the other. But, you know, I think for my money, it's got to be Curry just because it's been there all season. But if Westbrook keeps averaging, 40, 11, and 12, you're not going to be able to ignore him.
No, you won't. That's for sure. Those are great observations. And since they're in the same division as Portland, that's an interesting observation about Durant and Westbrook because they've always had this thing. I always felt like they needed each other to be successful. Now I'm not so sure. And last year you kind of saw it, you know, it was I dubbed them the Catch and Chuck brothers because that's basically what they do. How are they going to coexist when and if Kevin Durant comes back from this injury? That's another issue, is when is he going to come back? I talked to Sherm on my show, and he says he doesn't know. No one knows. I would have shut him down already, but that's the dynamic that's interesting. I'm glad that you brought that up. What do you think is going to wind up eventually happening over in Oklahoma City, though?
Well, first, this year, if you're the number 8 seed and Durant's health is in question, I think you shut that down. I think, you know, obviously anybody can come out of the West, anybody could win it. But if you're not, if this isn't your best swing, I think discretion is the better part of valor. You let him heal and you bring him back strong. The problem is, of course, he's in a contract year, so you don't know if you're bringing him back or if you're saving him for somebody else. Whether he goes to Washington, D.C. or what have you is an open question, and that'll be up to Kevin Durant. he will get paid by any team he wants to get paid by. And if he's of the mind to force a sign and trade or to, you know, get a team to sign him with free agent money, that is going to happen. So Oklahoma City is not exactly in the driver's seat here, except obviously they can offer him more money than anybody else. But if he decides that money isn't ultimately his number one issue and a max level contract somewhere else is sufficient, Oklahoma City's in trouble. Now, that doesn't usually happen. Then again, you know, this is an unusual situation. Russell Westbrook is not exactly, I don't want to say he's not a team guy because he helps your team, but Russell Westbrook is Russell Westbrook, and Russell Westbrook is interested in being the number one guy, and Kevin Durant is the number one guy, and neither one of them should really be anything different necessarily. So they're going to have to work it out if Durant comes back. I believe he probably will, but I think there's probably going to be some, I don't know, noise there, some wiggle room where there's going to be rumors flying hot and heavy, and he might test the market and see what it will bear, not financially, but just in terms of interest and exploring his options. He'll walk through the candy store probably before making a purchase.
You know, we just talked about that on my daily show today, and there's a rumor that he's going to be traded next season because next season's his last season. If it's me, I'm shutting him down because I've got one more shot to win with him, Westbrook, and Ibaka before Durant might take off. And I don't understand why they haven't. It doesn't make much sense, not from a business standpoint or even a personal standpoint. It just doesn't make sense. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I personally believe that he's going to bolt. He just seems like he's ready to go and fly his wings. He doesn't want to play second fiddle to Russell Westbrook another season or longer. I wouldn't want to if I were him either. So I wouldn't be able to blame him. But one thing that I don't want to do is end this show, but we must. And this has been a fantastic hour, sir. Thank you so much.
Well, absolutely. It's always a pleasure. And hopefully we'll have better news to share next week. Although, man, oh, man, the Blazers better use their recovery time and prep time this week because there are only two games in 7 days between Sunday and Saturday this week. There are five games in 7 days next week, and they are all on the road. So we hopefully will be able to sing a better song next Tuesday, but we will have to see. Blazers better get their house in order quickly.
Yes, they will. And speaking of getting our houses in order, we once again want to mention that we have done it. 1,151 young people are going to go to, more than likely, their very first Portland Trailblazers game. And we want to send out a great big shout out to all of you who just stepped in there. And those of you who couldn't, thank you for promoting it. We're really looking forward to meeting these young people. I'm looking forward to doing it next year. I'm just happy that I was a part of it. I'm humbled. I'm honored. We also have a Google Voice number where you can call in and talk and ask questions like the young lady did about Mr. Rice. And that number is 234-738-3394. Yes, it's an Akron number, but I live in Akron, and I'm the one who set up the account, and they wouldn't let me use a Portland number. And that's my apology, but please do. And if you do, and we air your question, I'll send you a free ebook, a basketball-related one. That's about it. We're on Max Sports channels every single day. Chris Lucia will be here this week. He was unable to work last week, and we really missed him, and we can't wait to see what he's going to do. He's got a very special guest planned, and that ought to be fun. For Dave Deckard, I'm Phil Nasons, and we want to thank you for listening to the Blazers Edge podcast.